was during the time when Miss Kamler was teaching, and there were very few Jewish teachers at Alderdice. And there was a teacher at Alderdice. She hadn't been there very long. She was a mature woman. And she had one day, and she was in charge of a boys' gym study class. And she had great difficulty in controlling them. And she was so upset that she said to this class of boys, "No wonder Hitler treats the Jews the way he does." And so that traveled like wildfire through the school. And the only way I knew about it was that Miss Kamler, the Latin teacher, came to my door and said, "I heard this statement was made. What shall we do about it?" I said, "Well, if you have a class, you go to your class, and I'll see what I can do." And I went down and I said, "Mr. Sharp, a certain statement was made here in this school today, and do you know about it?" And he said, "Yes, I do." I said, "Would you come with me to Mr. Devers, who was the principal?" And I said, "Mr. Devers, a certain statement was made here today, and before it gets beyond the end lines of this school, I think you should know about it." "Well," he said, "I will take care of it." And I said, "Would you like me to stay?" He said, "No." And I left. Now, that weekend, the Freehoffs were here. It was like a holiday time, perhaps Passover. And the Freehoffs were here for dinner. I never mentioned a word to Dr. Freehoff. I was waiting to see what would happen. And when we came back from the Easter vacation, this teacher was transferred, had already been transferred to another school. And a few of the teachers, I don't know how many, but a few, and the story was that I was responsible for getting her transferred. Now, it was 1955, and I remember that year because Jeanette Nestor and I took that first sabbatical, and we went to Europe and to Israel. And when I went to apply for that sabbatical, Dr. Graham was the superintendent then, and I told him that what was being said, I didn't mention any name, that I was responsible for Miss Laird's transfer. He said, "You had absolutely nothing to do with it." And that was that episode.
But was that an isolated kind of episode?
It was. And I became very friendly with Betty Porter. I don't know whether you knew her.
Yes, I had.
She came from a long line of Presbyterian ministers. And sometimes I would call her Rabbi Porter because if I wanted to identify something from the New Testament, I would send a note and ask her. Well, at any rate, we became personal friends, and Betty Porter, sister, had been a counselor at the Braddock High School. She was retired. The mother was a very distinguished-looking woman, and one evening, the Freehoffs were here, and the Porters, and Dr. Freehoff had helped to edit the Presbyterian songbook. And they were singing some of the songs, you know. So we had a perfectly wonderful evening. And she and the family were very good friends. We were very good friends. And I have kept up a relationship, as I said. Now, I hear from Charlotte Beechler all the time. She lives in Visalia, California. And on our last trip to California, she said, if you are coming here, you're not coming for a day. You are coming for a week. And they had every day planned where they took us. And Roy Brooks comes from, a seventh or eighth generation Californian. And he knew every nook and cranny. And they had every day planned, not only where we would go, but what we would do. And when they come to Pittsburgh, and they haven't been for some time, but on at least two occasions that I remember, they've always been here for dinner, and we correspond. In fact, I owe her a letter.
Have you had much opportunity to travel?
Well, I did mention about this three-month trip that we had to Europe and Israel in 1955, and then we had another trip, and that's the time that we went to Ireland. Did I mention about that? Well, we had friends in New York, and when they heard that we were going to Ireland, they said, well, we have friends in Dublin, and they gave us the name was White, W-H-I-T-E. And when we didn't know whether they were Jewish or not. But when we got to our hotel, Mrs. White called, and she used the expression, please God. And I thought, she must be Jewish. So we were there for about a week. And every day, she would take us some other place. Now, about being Jewish, Esther was, my younger sister, was office manager of Ben Swanger Hast and Herzog. She had a very responsible position. And when they heard, the Zurich Insurance Company gentleman heard that we were going to England, he said, well, you get in touch with the Zurich office and they'll put out the red carpet for you. And Esther said, no, I wouldn't do that because there'll be three of us. So I wouldn't impose on them. Well, it seems that the man at the head of the Zurich in the United States, whose offices are in Chicago, wrote to the man at the head of the Zurich in the British Isles in London. And so we got to London, and we were in our hotel. The phone rang, and here it was, Mr. Will Torton of the Zurich, and wanted to know when we were coming over. Well, we went over. His wife was visiting a son, so she wasn't in town at the time. And I forget where she was, but at any rate, so each day, he had each day planned where we would go and what we would do. And we went to the Tower of London, it seemed that a Coldstream guard took us through, not the regular guards, but this was of a higher echelon, and took us through. And he took us to the vaults. What do you call those vaults? They had all the silver vaults.
Crown jewels.
Yeah. And he had every day planned, every day. And not only that, but where we would be dining. And when we left, we were so grateful to him. And after all, we had so many more weeks of travel. We had really three months we were gone. So we didn't know what to get him. And finally, we decided we'd go to Fortnum and Mason and get a basket of fruit, which we did. Bless you. When we went to say goodbye to him and thank him for his kindness and his interest, hospitality, we talked, and he said something about a Jew was coming to apply for a position. And he said, you know, these Jews are very pushy. Well, we assumed that he knew we were Jewish. And our dear sister Jeanette said, well, you know, Mr. Wiltorton, England opened up its doors to the Jews. The opportunity gave Jews the opportunity to work here, to live here. I said, Mr. Wiltorton, I have a friend at home. I consider her a very fine Christian, and I think she thinks I'm rather a nice Jew. And then Esther said, I would like to personally thank the telephone operator for being so kind each time I phoned. Esther turned it off like that. Well, he said, to think that you would want to speak to the telephone operator. So she came in, and we spoke to her, and she bowed out. Anybody that came in to see him, he was that kind of person. He was invited to the Queen's parties and so on. In fact, when we left, he gave us a book of the Patton Guild that he, generations back. Now, this gentleman, they knew we were Jewish, obviously. And when we went back to England later years, I don't know how many years later, he just greeted us with open arms, and in that time, his wife was they lived in a suburb, and invited us there to spend the day and took us to tea in her home, and we had dinner in the home, and it couldn't have been nicer to us. So he knew who we are, and he respected us, I guess, for that. And so we continue to hear from him.
Have you done much traveling in this country?
Yes, well, we've been many years ago. Esther and I, we went west in Santa Fe, New Mexico, and we were there. And while we were there, we met two gentlemen, doctors, who were returning from a medical convention, and. So we became very friendly. They took this Indian detour, and we did too. And one was Dr. Pottinger, who has I don't know if he's still living, but he has a sanatorium for tuberculosis people who are afflicted with it, and he has a hospital there. And they come from all over the world. And the other gentleman was a surgeon. So we had three wonderful days with them, and they insisted that when we got to the coast, we were to visit them, which we did. Now, the reason that we took that trip is because I took some work at the University of California. And that was our reason for making that first trip to California.
When was that, approximately?
It must have been maybe in the 40s.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Maybe later. 1955, maybe. I don't know. Well, that was the first trip. Now, then later we went to California because we have a niece. Our sister Seal's younger daughter is at that time was married to an ophthalmologist from California. She's divorced, and she lives in California, and that's where our married sister Seal is now.
What did you do with your long summer vacations while you were teaching? Did you study or travel?
Well, that's why I went to California that summer and took work out there. One summer I went, as I told you, I worked at the Country Playhouse at Westport. I also, those were the years that I went to Camp Awani and worked there, and worked very hard there. So my summers were not empty summers, you know, I was always doing something.
How did you get around the city? For example, how did you get to Rhoda Sholem when you were living on the south side and you were going to Sunday school?
Well, we did. We learned how to get there.
Did you have a car?
No, we didn't have a car. We went to what did they have then? I guess buses and streetcars, and that's how we went. Mm-hmm. That's how we went. But my mother was a very intensely interested in Judaism, and when she had her sight, she read a great deal. And as I said, I just wish there isn't time to show you the eulogy that Dr. Friedhoff gave when my mother passed away. And in those, my mother always said she never wanted to be buried from a funeral home. And Dr. Friedhoff was at the head of the at the bottom of the stairs, and my mother, the coffin was here in the living room. But Dr. Friedhoff didn't know that Mildred Getzel was in the back bedroom upstairs taking down what he said. And when he learned that we had it, he said, "Give it to me and I'll edit it." And we said, "No, it's to be just the way it is." And we have the...
What year did she die, do you know?
1937.
Did your father survive her? Or had he
yes,
died her?
He survived. And then trying to remember the year, in the 40s, he passed away.
How long did you... When did you move to this house? I gather you moved from the south side to this
yes,
house right
moved.
Here?
Yes, we moved. Oh, gee. When... Well, it must have been 1927, and the summer that I was at Camp Awani, that's when this move took place.
Mm-hmm. And you've lived right here ever since?
And we've lived here ever since.
Mm-hmm. Would you care to comment on how Pittsburgh has changed in these intervening almost 50 years?
Well, I don't know what to say. That would take some doing here. I mean, it has... it wasn't... I don't say that the early years were not primitive. I mean, there was no... I mean, you know, there were the universities and there were the colleges and there were the school... religious school, and religion played a very important part in our family life that we always identified with temple. And we were always very close to the rabbis, and they have been close to us. And there was no difficulty in getting around. So I can't say specifically. You know, it wasn't the horse and buggy stage. It wasn't that. I guess it was. What, streetcars, buses?
How about the physical appearance of this neighborhood right here? Has it changed a great deal?
Yes, it has changed a great deal. Now, the house to the right was occupied by a maiden lady and her brother. And they came from a well-known, they belonged to a well-known family in Pittsburgh, and I just can't recall their name. And on the other side of us was also a very people by the name of Robenstein, and it was that kind of people who were living here. But of course the neighborhood has deteriorated. Even the modern building, like the house across the street there, that kind of a ranch-type house, you know, that was just coming into, I don't know how long that's been up. And then former Mayor McGee used to live in about, we're the fourth house, and he lived in about the sixth house. So it was that kind of area then. Now it has deteriorated a great deal, and across the street, those houses have changed so, and two of them have been broken up into a little apartments for university students or whoever. I mean, you have no contact with those people. But interesting enough, in the second house from the corner is Rabbi Weiss, Charles Weiss, and his wife and their four children, two boys and two girls, with whom we are very friendly. They are Lubavitchers or Lubavitchers, and they would not take anything in this house, and if they wanted to borrow anything, they'd bring a container of their own. But they call us, the eldest boy described us as the good neighbors. One day his mother discovered that he was bringing a bag of ice. And she says, "What are you doing that for?" He says, "For the good neighbors, because I guess occasionally we had a drink, you know, or we didn't even need the ice, you know." But so their way of life is from one extreme, is so extreme from ours, but we have great respect for her, and I think she respects us, and there's a very nice relationship. Now, he has that school, down on Fifth Avenue. Rabbi Weiss is principal of that school there. And, of course, during the strike now, they've had an influx of so many more, and probably children that will retain, that will continue to go there.
What kind of religious observances did you have in your home when you were a child?
Always. For Friday evening, the lighting of the candles. I mean, of course, that's traditional, and the prayers that we say, and all the holidays are observed, and we are regular temple goers, and we just don't go in the high holidays, but we go every Sabbath, and this is the way we've been brought up, and religion means, our Judaism means a great deal to us, and it has enriched our lives and enriched our family and our closeness. So, but then we have always had non-Jewish friends, and I think have learned some, if they didn't know before, they have learned something about Jewish family life and our way of life, the importance that temple worship means to us. And so we respect them for their observances, and they respect us. And this has always been, I mean, we've always had, like, of course, Charlotte Beechler and Nancy Montgomery. And they are, you know, that they're friends. I mean, we're not limited to just Jewish friends, but we have always had close Jewish friends and close non-Jewish friends.
I think we're close to being out of time. You have one more question. Go ahead.
You had said that you had thought yourself so well paid when you first started teaching. Was that just because it was a novelty, or really were you well paid for the time?
No, we were not well paid at all, at that time. And I mentioned that because I wanted to say that I am within the family, I have a reputation of being a spendthrift, and I don't know how to manage money. So I think I may have mentioned about my younger sister. Well, I would not have today if it weren't for her, and of course my sister Jeanette, but particularly Esther, who is highly organized and who manages my financial affairs.
Was there a specific time where, that you can think of really, where teachers began to get a more fair salary? Because it seems to me they do now. But
well,
how
I
recent
guess
is?
As the union developed, I think they, fought for higher salaries. But, you see, the union was just beginning. And I always remember one teacher. In fact, I can't remember her name. But she was violently unionist. And she was a minority, and I was not. I was satisfied. I thought it was a wonderful salary. Of course, it doesn't begin to compare what they're getting today. But times do change. But I was a member of the Pittsburgh Teachers Association, but that's quite a difference between that and the union. But I had never joined the union because I was satisfied with what I was getting. I suppose in later years I probably would have become a member of the union. I don't think anybody hears anything about the Pittsburgh Teachers Association, whether it's functioning or not.
Is there anything else you would like to add before tape runs out and forget it?
We have a few more minutes, yeah. Probably four.
Well, I don't know what I could say except that I think from what I have said, perhaps you have a little understanding of the family life here what I did. And I've always said that the teaching was the greatest learning experience of my life, and it transcends whatever I got academically. The teaching was extremely meaningful to me, and I maybe got more out of it than the student did. But it was a great learning experience, and I'm glad that I had it. And and the friends that I made are still my friends today.
Looking back over my notes, just to pick up one thing, what was the name of your father's business? In Pittsburgh, anyway.
It was called the Bon Ton. The store was called the Bon Ton.
Can you describe him to us? You mentioned that your mother was intensely interested in Judaism.
Yes.
Can you tell us something about your father?
Well, I think, first of all, I think our mother was a very handsome-looking woman. And as someone once said, Mrs. Hartz, you're so nice looking, and none of your daughters look like you. yes, that was a brilliant statement. Now, our father, he was not too tall. I think my mother was a little taller than he. And my father was a pipe smoker. He never said much. He always had a pipe in his mouth. The only time he didn't have was on the Sabbath. He didn't smoke on the Sabbath. And he went along with, I think our mother was the decision maker, and that he went along with her decisions concerning the children and the family. And he had high regard for her, and it was... as Dr. Friedhoff said in his eulogy about my mother, it was all for one and one for all.
Did your family's association with the Reform congregation go back before Pittsburgh, in the other cities in which you lived?
Always we identified. In Elton, we belonged to the Union Temple there, and that's where I was confirmed. But they, Esther and our dear brother Milton, Mick, we called him, he was confirmed at Temple. So we've always been identified with Reform Judaism.
Mm-hmm. Union Temple, did you say?
Yes.
I think that's about it.